From the Sky News Centre at 6, Boris Johnson has urged the UK to find closure and let the healing begin after a divisive general election campaign.
This country deserves a break from wrangling, a break from politics and a permanent break from talking about Brexit.
With all the votes counted, the Conservatives have 365 seats in Parliament, a majority of 80 MPs. The Prime Minister says the result shows he has a powerful mandate to get Brexit done. President Trump says he wants to get talks underway.
I want to congratulate. He's a friend of mine. It's going to be a great thing for the United States also, because it means a lot of trade, tremendous amount of trade. They want to do business with us so badly. Under the European Union, it was very, very hard for them to do business with us.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn says he'll step down in the new year after his party lost many seats to the Tories in former Labour strongholds.
I was elected to lead the party, and I think the responsible thing to do is not to walk away from the whole thing, and I won't do that. I will stay here until there has been somebody elected to succeed me, and then I will step down at that point.
Jo Swinson, who stepped down as Lib Dem leader after losing her seat, says she doesn't regret her party's focus on Remain voters. SNP leader Nicola Sturgeon says she'll publish a document on Scottish independence next week. A couple have been jailed for life for murdering a homeless woman in Birmingham and claiming nearly £5,000 worth of her benefits. Lisa Bennett, who was 39, was drowned in a bath and her body dumped in a communal bin in 2013. TV presenter Caroline Flack's been charged with assaulting a man in what's been described as a private domestic incident. She's due in court on the 23rd of December. And the actor Colin Firth has separated from his wife, Livia. Their representatives have said they're still close and remain united in supporting their two sons. They got married in 1997 and previously split in 2015. That's the latest. I'm Andy Hayes.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock, and welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. Tony Gosling helping me review this week's news is Green Party councillor for Clifton Down, Clive Stevens, and Brexit Party candidate for Bristol South, Robert DeVito Boutin. Also, Who Owns Britain author Kevin Cahill, an Irish Republican Labour activist, a bit of a regular here, isn't he, for the last 12 years, Martin Summers. After the US-owned Comcast News at 7, another election in Israel, the third this year, something's clearly not working. Perhaps it's that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu refuses to hand over power to someone that might have him prosecuted. Perhaps the only thing keeping him from trial and perhaps jail too is the fact that he's Prime Minister. Sounds a bit medieval, doesn't it? Crusades, perhaps? And YouTube once more shut down Iran's Press TV account, not giving any reason. What does this say about the power of the parent company, Google? And why should we be worried that we can no longer hear what's coming out of a so-called font of all Middle Eastern terrorism in Tehran? And also the Pentagon's secret Project Marvin, artificial intelligence drone killers. Is this the future of warfare? Drones with no conscience? Killing those nasty terrorists on the orders of the Pentagon? And Greta Thunberg's been speaking again this week, but what about her handler and guide, Luisa Neubauer? And a man who was sentenced to death in absentia at Nuremberg, World War II fugitive, Hitler's private secretary and Nazi party treasurer Martin Bormann. We hear this week about his way with women and how the May the 1st, 1945 Fleming rescue tale dovetails incredibly well with the official story. That's all in the second hour after the US-owned Comcast News at 7. On to our news review in a minute, but first Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Lows around 5 degrees, Celsius. Strong winds and light rain. That's tonight. This weekend, temperatures around about 9 Celsius. The highest and light rain showers and a moderate breeze over the weekend. Next week, that's highs around 11, mainly cloudy with showers. Next weekend, the 21st and 22nd of December, highs of 10 Celsius, sunshine and fleeting showers. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. And I'll probably better start by saying that we've been told that the radio studio here from next Friday midday is all going to be powered down, so no show next week. We're hoping to have one in between Christmas and New Year, though. Anyway, we'll start by introducing Robert DeVito Boutin. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a bit about your political background. Why did you decide you wanted to stand for the Brexit Party?
Well, the first part of your question, I have no political background. My wife and I spent 2.5 years in France, and when we came back, we would often say to people in France, of course, that wouldn't happen in Great Britain. We came back and we were quite shocked. This was between the referendum
happen?
And...
What wouldn't happen?
Various behaviours, because we saw the presidential election of President Macron, who was imposed on the French. They're still objecting. You may not see it in mainstream media, but every Saturday in French cities, the Gilets Jaunes are demonstrating against a very oppressive tax regime. It's very stifling in France. If you've been on holiday in France, you won't see the real France, but if you live with the French, you'll see what they have to put up with.
Well, you say you've no political background. You must have some background of some sort. So where have you come from to politics?
Right, okay. Well, I started my working career as a teacher. I spent 15 years doing that, and then I'd always wanted to write. And an opportune time came, so I sold everything and spent 2 years writing screenplays in L.A., and then got onto a writing course and spent 12 years as an advertising copywriter, and then went back to teaching after that as a head teacher of a school.
Okay, a bit of a contrast, doing advertising and screenplays. Did you get any of your screenplays turned into films, and is there anything we might recognise?
No. I managed to get one shortlisted for a festival, and I managed to write the ending of somebody else's, but that was a vanity project, so I can't take any credit for that.
Okay, but what about the Brexit Party particularly? There was a whole hiatus, wasn't there, halfway through the not long after the announcement of the election, that a lot of Brexit Party people were standing down. Do you think that was the right decision? And if so, why?
Yes, I do, even though it affected us personally. Because you may know, I was originally selected to stand for St Ives in the Isles of Scilly. And then a candidate for Truro stood down and they asked me to move to Truro, which we did. We also moved house to make that possible. And 3 days later, we were asked to stand down. So it had a massive impact on us as a family.
Did this affect quite a lot of the Brexit Party candidates being basically told, no, you're not allowed to stand?
Yes, I think it did. A lot of people had given up jobs and given up a huge amount. And there was a tremendous camaraderie. And I think that whatever the rights and wrongs of it, it was quite clear that it had a massive impact on morale.
Anyway, it looks like maybe the right decision to make. We'll be talking a bit more about the general election in a minute. We're going to start, though, with some local story which has made the national press, that is to say the national journalistic press. And this is all to do with a couple of weeks ago. It's not really this week's story, although it came out in the Bristol Post this week, Clive. Could you, Clive Stephen, you're from the Green Party here in Bristol, and you were actually at this meeting which this Bristol Post article complains about. It's basically saying that the mayor was bullying one of the journalists at the Bristol Post in this meeting and humiliating him in front of everybody. You were there. Take us through a bit of this.
Hi, Tony. Yes, I was, actually. The first bit was done with the microphone off, so I was there shuffling around with my papers and wondering
What was the meeting? What was it for?
It was a cabinet meeting. Okay. And the cabinet meetings are the ones chaired by the mayor themselves, whereas full council others are chaired by other people.
But by the Lord Mayor, I think, isn't it?
Lord Mayor for full council, or by the chair of the appropriate scrutiny.
So the cabinet is a little sort of mini version of what we've got up in Downing Street. But here, what is the purpose of the meeting then, the cabinet?
So they take decisions that, in theory, have already been taken, but it's a formal democratic way of showing that we still live in some form of democracy.
So the various leaders sitting around the table of different departments in the city council say, I formally approve this decision.
Exactly. Kind of so Councillor Paul Smith might be doing one on housing and Helen Holland might be doing one on adult social
care. It allows a little bit of scrutiny with councillors like yourself to ask questions, say, well, hang on a minute, are you really sure about this? That kind of thing. So what was the comment at the, before the microphone was switched on then?
Well, I personally didn't hear it. But the way it was reported was that Marvin, our mayor, said to Adam, who's the local democracy reporter, something like, are we going to get a journalist in here?
Right, so it was a bit of a sarcastic remark saying, he was criticising some of his previous coverage of the meetings. I mean, that's okay, surely that's the chair's prerogative. They can make a little crack if they want, a wise crack if they want. Wasn't it the idea to sort of lighten the mood?
I don't know what Marvin's idea was. I think he was irritated by an article, in fact, possibly a series of articles that Adam had written over the previous few weeks. Adam is staunchly sort of independent from what I can see, and writes pro Labour and anti Labour and pro other parties, anti other parties. But maybe he'd gone on a bit of a run, and maybe Marvin a bit sensitive of general election and stuff like that.
Well, look, the local democracy reporters is something quite important nowadays, aren't they? Because a lot of these big newspapers have got much, much less advertising revenue. They can't afford to have reporters go in and cover boring meetings. I mean, we would say they're boring meetings, so they don't make great headlines, but often they're quite important, aren't they?
No, you're absolutely right there. And some of the papers obviously have a particular political stance anyway on the basis of the readership and the type of advertising that they carry. So the local democracy reporters, who are paid for by the BBC out of the licence fee, are supposed to add a bit of independence and assist the scrutiny of what's going on in council meetings.
So the insinuation was that the reporter from the Bristol Post wasn't actually there. Let's have a listen now to the opening of this with the chair and the mayor of cabinet, Marvin Rees, speaking. And this is Tuesday before last.
Okay, all very nice. Okay, so welcome. No, just a jovial start to today's serious business of cabinet. So item 17, Hartcliffe Way Reuse and Recycling Centre. That's a really important name just to register. Hartcliffe Way Reuse Recycling Centre.
And the reporter had said it was a dump, apparently.
Journalists who might be listening somewhere out there on the internet, that it is also important that we don't allow our political bias to be put on full display. And that we offer people the opportunity to engage with issues as they actually are. And actually, the world is a little bit more complicated than crash, bang, wallop. It's very important that we move beyond clickbait and get to helping people navigate their way through a complicated world. And I hope we've said that as gently as anyone might need it. I know there are some sensitive people out there. So next up, it's yourself, Councillor Pearce. Agenda item 17, Hartcliffe Way Reuse and Recycling Centre. Let me just a couple of words of introduction. So this is to update on the development of the Household Reuse and Recycling Centre at Hartcliffe Way. So let's go now to a councillor question. I think we have Martin Fodor here, if I can see him. Unmissable. Okay.
This is just to update on the development of a new Household Reuse and Recycling Centre. I will say that again. A household reuse and recycling centre, not a tip and not a dump, but a household reuse and recycling centre. The Household Reuse and Recycling Centre.
I think it's a point reasonably well made, Steve. Also, it's really important. I'm glad you made that you stressed the point, Councillor Fodor, about this being a reuse and recycling. I saw some really poor writing that described it as a tip, a city dump. It's not a dump, and I'm sure you'd agree that that is appalling way of describing a critical intervention in the way the city relates to, manages, and processes its waste.
Well, that's the beginning of the meeting, and a little bit way through it, about an hour of this kind of taunting, really. I mean, it's the way to describe it. The mayor has been accused by Hold the Front Page, which is a national journalist's rag, of publicly tarnishing a journalist at the meeting. Regional dailies hit out at political chiefs after repeated critical remarks were allegedly made about one of its journalists during a council meeting. The Post has criticised Marvin Rees, directly elected mayor of Bristol, as well as several other senior Bristol City Council figures who joked about the credentials of local Democracy reporter Adam Postans. And we'll hear a bit more from Clive, who was at the meeting. But first, there's the One Love Breakfast Show, award-winning programme here presented by Pat Hart and others here on BCFM, where they discussed this very incident. And really, they were saying, well, this could be quite easily construed as a racist comment that the Evening Post were making about Bristol's mixed-race mayor.
I just want to give a shout-out to Mike Norton at the Bristol Post. I have seen the most horrible, spiteful article in the Bristol Post. And you know when people say those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones? From an editor that has been responsible for, as far as I'm concerned, for some of the most misleading and vile stories in our city and helped to fuel division, he now wants to have a go at Asher Craig and Marvin Rees, our mayor, for questioning the credentials of maybe one or two journalists in the chamber. I've read the story, mate. I think you're abusing your power, personally, if indeed you have any left. It's not fair. Marvin Rees and Asher Craig, irrespective of whether we love them or loathe them politically, don't need that kind of treatment, because all you're doing is pushing on a stereotype once again. You know you're doing it, and you know that some of your clickbait readers love it, so I think you need to stop it. Anybody that's seen that story, and now I'm encouraging people to click on their blooming story, which is what I didn't want to do, but I just needed to say it. I saw a reporter talking to our mayor the other day, and he just came straight on the TV and said, right, fine. Well, why should I have anything positive to say about somebody that says that people like me have watermelon smiles and describes me as, you know, as a pickaninny, et cetera, et cetera? And he hits back when the BBC and other people decide to frame a question about race or about whatever and stereotype. He doesn't sit there and smile like a lot of, you know, people of colour have done in the past. He hits back and says, listen, I don't like the premise of your question.
Well, that's fair enough, Clive Stevens from the Green Party, isn't it? You know, for the mayor to hit back when he's attacked in this insinuating racist-type way that the Evening Post is alleged to have done here.
Well, Marvin, from what I've heard and read, had a difficult upbringing, and he obviously learnt to fight back. He took up boxing, and I suspect that he's learnt that form of behaviour, and one has to understand that. We all have our chips on our shoulder, our behavioural characteristics. But I think one of the problems that Marvin has in cabinet is that he is under scrutiny and is chairing it. And therefore, there's no other control. And I've seen him hit out at other people, whether it's councillors, which I get partially fair, or other journalists or members of the public. I can't remember if it was cabinet where he was criticising doctors for the air pollution that they were causing. So I think it's a behaviour where somebody might want to counsel him on how it is perceived. I'm not sure whether the Post went over the top or whether it's racist. I'm white myself, so I find that really difficult to judge. I'm aware of these issues, but it's so difficult for somebody who's not had that kind of upbringing to really understand.
But I mean, it's also possible that straight criticism could be interpreted as racism, misinterpreted.
Indeed, I think I'm sure that's the case. Yeah, it could be misinterpreted.
Now, anyway, let's have a little listen to a bit more of this council meeting a bit later on, as Martin Fodor from the Greens is questioning about the waste and recycling centre up on Hartcliffe Way.
Momentary questions, Councillor Fodor.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks for all that detail. I look forward to the written version of it so I can have a closer look. I hope it can be made available for scrutiny. Obviously, it has to take its place in the queue for that. Yeah, as you know...
Councillor Fodor, can I just emphasise...
I've just given you that undertaking.
Yeah.
If you want this at scrutiny, yeah, it will come.
You keep, this is, can I just say, just as chair, there's been quite a few meetings, I think in the 3.5 years since I've been here, that you've asked about stuff going to scrutiny, and we keep saying it's scrutiny's decision about what goes to scrutiny. It's not our decision.
I hadn't quibbled
you,
on that.
No, but it seems to be like every cabinet or every other cabinet, you ask if stuff goes to scrutiny as though it's our decision. It's not our decision. It's scrutiny's decision.
I'm well aware of that.
Yeah. So what you want to, but by asking that question, it begins to feel as though you might be suggesting that we don't like scrutiny. Just if you want to come scrutiny, just schedule it. That's fine. You don't need to ask our permission. It's not our. It's not in our power.
I wasn't, Mayor. I was asking for the material to be made available.
Oh, right. And I thought you were looking at the reporter.
No, in the 5 years, five and a half years I've been involved in scrutiny of this service, in the 5.5 years, we've had everyone up to the previous mayor attending our scrutiny because they made themselves available for scrutiny. That's all I'm asking for. The material and the politicians and the officers actually come and make themselves available. But I wasn't specifically going to talk about that. I was going to talk about the topic we have from my questions to the cabinet.
Can we just go on to your supplementary then? I think there's a kind of accidental or deliberate misunderstanding. Let's move on to your supplementaries.
I'm trying to.
We've been met with all the many of the major waste contractors operating in the city about thinking about what we do with the existing city infrastructure to transform Bristol's relationship with waste, minimising waste, better processing, reuse, recycling and waste to energy, but also how we design our relationship with waste into the major developments that are coming through, the thousands of homes that will be delivered in Bristol as well. So, as you said, it's one of the most important relationships, and the importance of that relationship can't be lost just by chortling it away through poor descriptions.
Or poor journalism. Anyway, I'll just bring Kevin Carhill and Martin Summers in on this. I wonder what you think, Kevin, about whereabouts we are here. Is it legitimate criticism of the mayor, or is it a kind of form of racism, do you think, we're looking at here?
Well, the short comment is it's a total waste of time. You know, aren't there serious issues these people could be discussing? This really is political correctness at its worst. It turns a serious discussion into, you know, you said and what did it mean what you said and was it racist? There's a limit to which you can impose political correctness on anything before you wind up with no human beings in the equation. We're all a bit rough-edged.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this first I've heard about this dispute this evening, Tony. And of course, you know, this kind of, picking over the minutiae of cabinet meetings might not be everybody's cup of tea out there listening to this show, but it's also part of being a part of making a record of what goes on in the city and, taking things seriously. I think the allegation of racism came from the manager of BCFM, didn't it? Sounded to me as if they were rowing about whether he'd reported whether it was a tip or not. Now, what has racism got to do with that? That's misreporting whether it's a tip or is it a tip or is it not a tip? Yeah, and that's the substance of the matter. And why turn it into anything else?
Let's bring Robert in from the Brexit Party on this. I mean, this is probably the first you've come across this as well, Robert, but I wonder what you make of the way that the Mayor and the Bristol Post are handling this.
It's hard to know what to say, but I agree entirely with this, the fact that it's just a waste of time. And I think also we have to take into account the fact that we're not all the same age, we weren't all born in the same moment, and we don't all use the same language to refer to things. People who are older are used to taking stuff down to the tip, and they don't mean any offence by it, that's just what they call it. Now, we've now called it reuse and recycling. Fine. In many ways, it doesn't change the function of it, and it takes people time to adjust to calling this the new name, and there may be another new name, but to get hung up on new names when the point is, what does this facility actually achieve?
And how much? And how much is it?
Is the point?
How much extra is it costing, Clive? As well, this is the key reason, and that's why the Local Democracy Report is there, really.
Well,
Indeed. Now, that is the important reason. Now, it was originally budgeted at 4 million. Apparently, that was an under budget, far too optimistic. It's now 7 million. And the point that Martin was making, you didn't quite pick that clip out, was that there was no business plan to prove that it was value for money for the 7 million. It might be, it might not be.
Well, that is interesting, isn't it? And as the mayor, it doesn't matter actually who you are, mayor or not, whoever's chairing a meeting needs to bring everybody on side. And it doesn't seem like that was quite happening in that meeting. Is that your experience there, Clive?
My experience is if you're an opposition councillor and you go into sort of cabinet to ask scrutiny-type questions, it's slightly entering the dragon's den. You do it with a bit of trepidation, whereas if you do it in any other council meeting, you know it's going to be chaired in a chairperson type way.
And the council actually does have rules about treating people with respect and that sort of thing.
Indeed. In fact, it came to audit committee and I was one of the people that was on that. And I think one of the councillors has raised this very issue. Oh, if you go back and look at the video, of the bit before the microphone was switched on, you'll see lots of people laughing. And the context were they were laughing at Marvin's original joke, and that included some of the officers.
I mean, the context of all of this is, was it bullying or was it humour? And was it racism? So anyway, this probably will rumble on into the future. And the mayoral campaign, I suppose, is taking off now. We've had a general election yesterday, in case folks haven't noticed. One of the casualties of it, first casualties, was the Lib Dems and their leader, Jo Swinson. Here she was on the Peston Show just the day before the general election, setting out her stall, which I'm afraid is now rather fallen through the floor.
Look, let me just first of all set out why we want to remain in the EU. You know, those of us who voted Remain and woke up on that day, on the 24th of June 2016, having seen that vote, it wasn't a sense of distress at some kind of, you know, EU institution. It was a feeling that our very liberal values as a country were under attack, who we are as a country. And so this is about those values, yeah, about being an inclusive, open society where everyone is respected. And the problem with Jeremy Corbyn is not only that he says he'll be neutral in Brexit, it is that he has singularly failed to deal with this issue of anti-Semitism in his party, right? You know, just at the weekend, we saw horrific details of this in the Sunday Times, of the Labour member who had been posting about gassing Jews, and Labour took 8 months to expel him from the party. When Alistair Campbell voted Lib Dem, they expelled him in 2 days, right? Just look at that contrast there. Jeremy Corbyn is not taking that seriously. It's a fundamental issue of values of equality and human rights. And that is why
I stand by my position that Jeremy Corbyn is not fit to be Prime Minister.
So there she is, Jo Swinson, sitting at her stall. And this is one of the things that I find so interesting about these general election campaigns, is Jo Swinson spending quite a lot of her time actually attacking Corbyn because she wants his voters to vote for her, Martin.
Well, indeed, and it's shown to be a pretty silly strategy, wasn't it? Also, of course, saying that they were going to revoke Brexit without a referendum, which is basically what everybody had been agreeing, the second referendum, they just chucked that overboard. That, with hindsight, will be seen to be a silly strategy.
Although the Lib Dems gained one, she lost her seat.
Yeah, well, I mean, they stood in the middle of the road and they got run over. That's what happens,
Kevin?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. As a former Liberal, the way Jo Swinson launched the campaign was catastrophic. What happened to her last night was actually deserved. She ran an extremely bad campaign. She fell into the trap of attacking Corbyn when she should have shut up and stuck to her own, you know, remit. There are grave suspicions. Unfortunately, our country has a strain of anti-Semitism throughout our society. It's not confined to the Labour Party. And the attack on the Labour Party was clearly political. And to engage in that and to get involved in it was silly. Those are my comments.
Robert from the Brexit Party, what do you make of the sort of crashing and burning of Jo Swinson?
Well, I think it's the first time I've heard that interview after the referendum. And I don't really understand why she says that she felt that her liberal values had been attacked, when actually what had taken place was democracy in action. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I think that is liberality, that is freedom at work. People are free to make a decision. The issue was that we weren't then free to implement the decision. And I don't understand her take on it. It's completely illogical to me. But also, yes, I agree. I think that she set out with a great deal of pride. I mean, to sum up, what she was really saying is, I'm going to enter into this democratic process with a view to cancelling a democratic decision. And therefore, she got what she deserved.
Clive, what do you make of the Green Party's results? I mean, you're welcome to talk about the Lib Dems as well if you want, but I mean, we've seen a bit of a shock in Stroud, haven't we? Because the Greens, Molly Scott-Cato, stood against the sitting Labour MP. It's like there's a little bit of red Stroud in the middle of all the sea of blue in Gloucestershire, and it was Conservative, I think, was it back in 2010? And because the Greens campaigned so hard and strong, they managed to hand the seat back to the Conservatives, didn't they?
Firstly, a couple of seconds on the Lib Dems, if I may. I think the Scots have done the Lib Dems a real favour. Joe Swinson was a disaster from the start, I'd say 140 days or something. She firstly came out with this idea of a reversing Brexit if she was Prime Minister. And that.
Sorry, she started off saying, when I'm Prime Minister, didn't she?
Yeah, okay, we'll start with that mistake. And then, from what I can see, it just went worse. And Jeremy Corbyn and the Lib Dems and the Scottish Nationalists at one stage had Boris jumping around like a puppet. They could have got a second referendum before this general election. Why they suddenly decided to go to a general election where most people would see Boris was likely to win, I don't know. They were just stuck in their bubbles. Anyway, talking about bubbles, let's get to Stroud. Molly Scott-Cato has been working in Stroud for a long, long time. Stroud Council is half Labour, half Green. She's the Green MEP. And I think it's perfectly justified for her to stand there. She got a tremendous increase in the vote. I think it tripled.
Okay, let's just look at the figures, because I know it's both around 30,000, isn't it? The Labour and Conservative, both hovering around 30,000. Yeah. Molly's vote is around about, I think she's got the biggest ever this time, which was 5,000. I mean, she doesn't stand a chance of beating either of them. So her standing against Labour has just handed the seat to the Tories.
You've got to go back a bit further. In the 2017 election, Greens stood down a number of candidates unilaterally. In the 2019 election, we got nothing back from Labour. In the 2019 election, as you know, we did a deal with the Lib Dems, and whether that worked or not, time will tell. But Labour were not willing to play ball. Therefore, you have to fight back. And the thing about being a political party is you need to get votes. UKIP and Brexit were the perfect lesson. If you start taking votes, you get change. And we have to keep taking votes.
Is there any future for these electoral pacts, maybe in Stroud next time or something?
I think there's a real future, but it's Labour are going to be the ones.
Okay, Martin, over to you. Is it going to happen?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I've always been in favour of electoral reform as a matter of principle.
And we're talking here about a pact under the existing system.
We need to change the way we do business. I mean, we've got ourselves as a country into
this mess.
Did
it make sense for Molly Scott-Cato to stand against David Drew?
If there's no deal with the Labour Party, she's perfectly within her rights to stand. Yeah?
And campaign really hard.
Well, that's okay. I mean, they've got to stand somewhere. If they're trying to break in, like the Independent Labour Party tried to break into the system at the beginning of the 20th century, you've got to stand somewhere to have a go. And of course, in places like Germany, where the Greens are on 20-something% and are outpolling the Social Democrats, it's perfectly feasible that they could be a bigger force if there was a different way of doing things. And of course, what's happened in Northern Ireland in the 1960s and what's happening now in Scotland today is, if you don't change the system, then other people start to look for other ways of resolving the problem, just like when the Slovenian National Guard opened fire on the Yugoslav National Army
okay.
in 1991.
Well, we've been talking about some of the losers now.
Good morning, everybody, my friends. Well, we did it. We did it. We pulled it off, didn't we? We pulled it off. We broke the deadlock. We ended the gridlock. We smashed the roadblock and in this glorious, glorious pre-breakfast moment before a new dawn rises on a new day and a new government. And I, of course, want to congratulate absolutely everybody involved in securing the biggest Conservative majority since the 1980s. Which was literally, as I look around, literally before many of you were born. And with this mandate and this majority, we will at last be able to do what?
Get Brexit done!
You've been paying attention. Because this election means that getting Brexit done is now the irrefutable, irresistible, unarguable decision of the British people. And with this election, I think we've put an end to all those miserable threats of a second referendum. Yeah. Your hand may have quivered over the ballot paper as before you put your cross in the Conservative box. And you may intend to return to Labour next time round. And if that is the case, I am humbled that you have put your trust in me and that you have put your trust in us. And I and we will never take your support for granted. And I will make it my mission to work night and day, flat out, to prove you right in voting for me this time and to earn your support in the future. And I say to you that in this election, your voice has been heard, and about time too. Because we politicians have squandered the last 3 years, 3.5 years, in squabbles about Brexit. We've even been arguing and about the tone of our arguments. I will put an end to all that nonsense. And we will get Brexit done on time by the 31st of January. No ifs, no buts, no maybes. Leaving the European Union as one united kingdom, taking back control of our laws, borders, money, our trade, immigration system, delivering on the democratic mandate of the people. And at the same time, this One Nation Conservative government will massively increase our investment in the NHS, the health service that represents the very best of our country, with this single beautiful idea that whoever we are, rich, poor, young, old, the NHS is there for us when we are sick. And every day that service performs miracles. And that is why the NHS is this One Nation Conservative government's top priority.
That's Boris Johnson there from the Brexit Party, Robert. This, I suppose, is you would see as a victory for Brexit rather than for Boris. But can we trust him to deliver, do you think?
Well, that is the question. And I don't think anybody can actually answer that question. There's a lot of bluster. There's a lot of verbal pushing and shoving. It's not Brexit. And on the one hand, Boris is saying this, that and the other. And on the other hand, Michel Barnier is saying no. And the great difficulty with the whole Brexit argument is that if you try and play it as a deal, the EU have all the cards.
So what do you think we are going to get at the end of January? Why do you say that's not Brexit?
Because what Boris wants is to take control of all the things that he was enumerating there is not what the EU is prepared to give. The great difficulty is that the EU needs us far more than we need the EU, and there is no incentive for them to let us leave. So the cards are all in Barnier's.
He's already got a deal, apparently, hasn't he?
Yeah, but the deal involves compromises that are really unacceptable to our fishermen and to many other sectors of society.
I think the sort of problem you've just said, that the EU needs us more than we need them, that is not true. That's a silly fact. We're the smaller part of a very big market. And historically, we have, over our imperial history, often attacked countries to steal their markets. This is about the first time we have ever moved to create barriers to increase costs between us and our main market.
Okay, Kevin, let's just let Robert answer that accusation. Why do you think they need us more than we need them?
Because they have £100 billion surplus with us, and because they want our seat on the UN. There's so many. Why are they making it so hard for us to leave?
Look, I think it's simple. A big market with low barriers to trade. I mean, this is what business has been trying to say for the past 3 years. In Dublin, I sat beside the person, the head of our Export Institute, and she had the figures, the real figures, not snake oil figures, the extra costs we're going to incur as a result of Brexit, and they come to 18 billion. This stuff about a surplus somewhere is wrong.
Martin, could you let us know what you think of the economics of this? Because we did have a clip from Mervyn King, didn't we, a few weeks ago, where he says basically economically it's not going to make any difference at all. So you obviously
I don't agree with that. I mean, I think we're talking across purposes, because the surplus you're talking about is a fiscal surplus, paying into the fiscal thing. What Kevin's talking about is the actual trading and buying and selling of goods. So let's clarify why we're talking about two separate things.
No, sorry, can I just interrupt? I was talking about £100 billion trade surplus.
Oh, trade surplus. I thought you meant to do with our payments.
There is that as well, but that's
yeah,
what
well,
I was
in,
talking
in
about.
Yeah, well, in that case, it's in their interest to get rid of us, isn't it? Because they can put barriers up to our exports. And that's what the French, who are demonstrating, you were talking about the French, the Gilets jaunes, really, there's an indefinite general strike in France now against pension reform. We don't get stuff like that here, do we? We ought to, but we don't. And of course, it's not really about not paying too much taxes. It's about the rich not paying any taxes after the collapse of the banking system, and it was all bailed out. That's why there's no money in the national treasuries, because the private sector was bailed out, and that's not free market economics, is it? And of course, there is no free market economics anymore. Once the banks collapse, we've moved into a different era. Although
the banks didn't collapse; they were bailed out.
Well, exactly. So, in other words, after that point, the distribution of resources is no longer a market distribution of resources. It's a political decision to bail out Deutsche Bank or Barclays Bank or Goldman Sachs, which became a bank, and be bailed out.
So, doesn't political independence give us a bit more leeway about what happens in the UK?
Well, in the past, in the 1970s, when I went to university, I was interviewed at Oxford University. Said to me, what do you understand by the term seed economy? And at that stage, the economy in Britain was actually fairly self-contained.
Well, we could be heading that way.
All the just-in-time supply chains have been created globally and in the EU.
Could we be heading for a seed economy here now?
Well, if there's a banking collapse, we're going to have to bring in things like exchange control so people can't take their money out of the country. Well, don't forget, in 1979, you couldn't take more than £1,000 out of this country without permission from the government.
So I'm trying to get out of you, Martin. Do you think that's where we're heading now?
Well, we're heading towards basically, and if the really important thing is, if there's not a trade deal between Trump and the Chinese next week, the markets could go down the drain because they're basically priced in a deal. And if that happens, Boris Johnson is going to be talking about Brexit. He's going to be talking about
the markets. Yeah, but the markets seem to be saying Brexit's great.
Yeah, but I mean, don't forget the whole thing about all of this. The markets are in a totally artificial state because we've been on zero interest rates plus quantitative easing for 10 years. Yes. Something that was supposed to happen for about 3 months while they sorted themselves out.
Yeah, but it isn't, is it?
And of course, anyway, everybody thinks it's fixed.
Let Clive have his say. What do you think we're going to really notice the economic effects of Brexit, Clive?
Yes, I think we will. I think we'll quite heavily, but the country has taken its decision, and that's up to our new leaders to mitigate that, make it work. They're now responsible for lots of areas in the north of England, which are going to be hurt even further. But politically, it was about taking back control, and I had a bit of sympathy with that argument. I did a law postgrad, and I studied European law, and some of the case history on the European Court of Justice is just out of order. So it's that judgment, and we now have to get behind who not me, but other people have voted for. There's going to be a real mess in Ireland, and maybe Kevin's going to talk about that now.
Anyway, let's...
Just very briefly. I mean, Robert, I'm not as utterly pro as I might sound. I have to deal with the EU bureaucracy on a daily basis, and they are unspeakable. is the only word for it. But Martin did make it clear. I was on a delegation to Dublin, an official delegation from the City of London last year. And it's very funny to be Irish, watching the Irish government, you know, wringing its hands and saying, woe is us, it's all dreadful, and realising that unemployment in Dublin is zero. There are about 10,000 vacancies. And the chap from Belfast who came down to talk to us was explaining that the Republic is draining people out of Northern Ireland because there are so many job vacancies in the Republic, and most of them are coming from American corporations moving in out of London and into Ireland.
So, Robert, what will you say in a year's time, or even 2 years' time, if the economy is in a bit of a downturn? Will you be sort of walking away from the Brexit Party with embarrassment? What do you think is going to happen? And see if you can back it up with a bit of economic facts.
Well, that's the first question is completely hypothetical, and I have no idea where I'm going to be in 2 years' time. So I actually can't answer that. Well, the thing is that there is a £100 billion trade surplus. The French and the Germans need us from a trade point of view more than we need them. There are a lot of massive German companies providing car parts, and there's all sorts of things going on. And politicians will talk about trade, but businessmen will talk about deals. They'll talk about a willing buyer and a willing seller. And they're not going to let those businesses disappear. They will find a way of making money. They will find a way of making it work. The other thing to add is it's not just physical exports. 80% of the money we earn is from our service economy. And that's global because it relies quite heavily on the English language. I mean, the greatest surplus we have in the EU is with Holland because most Dutch people speak perfect English.
Haven't you and the Tories also played the immigration card here in this election by basically saying, look, you know, watch out for the migrants? And that also potentially could be, you know, interpreted as racism. And that seems to have been certainly one of the sides to the Labour Party's accusations. So how do you answer those sort of criticisms, or can you?
I don't think that you can see it. If you see everything in terms of racism or fascism or this, you change the argument. It stops it being.
But there
courteous
are a lot of
civilized
racists who don't like immigrants, aren't they? And one of the main points of the Tories and the Brexit Party is stopping immigration, or at least taking back control of it.
No, it's about being measured about the immigration. If you think about if we're going to provide a safe haven for people who are coming, they're fleeing from war, then we have to have the facilities to do that. When we were in France, we were close to some friends in a town where a number of families had decided that they were going to take refugees from the camps in Calais. And they all got together and they all agreed that each family could take one refugee. If they realised that if they took more than one refugee, that would disturb their family culture. They wouldn't necessarily be able to feed them. They wouldn't necessarily be able to assimilate them or absorb them without changing their own values and their own life and actually providing the very safety and security that those people were searching for.
But isn't that just a way of dividing the refugees up?
No, the point I'm making is that you can only absorb so many people before you actually change your own culture and you're not offering them what they've come for. That's the great difficulty. And it's not racist and it's not anti-immigration. It's just about being sensible. I mean, that's one side of it. But we've heard a lot of stories about people in Bristol South, for example, who a lovely lady who'd lived in a council house for 40 years, opposite where her mother was born. She was elderly. She had a 3-bedroom council house. She moved to a 2-bedroom flat. She wanted her daughter, who has 3 children and husband, to have the house that she'd been brought up in, but that's not possible. She pleaded for it, and they are living in a 2-bedroom top floor flat, which is very difficult for them. And when the announcement came, it went to a very newly arrived family with 1 child. That causes problems, that causes resentment in society, and that makes it very, very difficult for people to continue to live together. Issues around it. I'm not racist, I'm not anti-immigrant, I wouldn't be doing this. But I just think we have to be measured, and it's far too easy for the arguments to get too emotional and people get put into boxes immediately. That's been something about all of this. People are immediately put into boxes, and what I'm longing for is a courteous, civilized debate where we can park all that stuff, and we can talk about what is best for our nation and how can we best serve people who really, really need a refuge and a safe place or somewhere where their families can...
Clive, from the Green Party, what do you make of this? Because immigration clearly has been a large part of the... really the reason for the Brexit vote in the first place, and the reason that you've had actually... probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of traditional Labour voters actually voting Tory, you know, holding their nose for the first time.
Yes, I think so. And it's been going on quite a while. I think it was Tony Blair, was it, that opened up the borders to Romanians and Bulgarians when other European countries were saying, hang on, give us a few more years or give us some quotas. I'm guessing that was because the economy was booming and the business wanted cheap labour. Not sure. But what didn't happen was the infrastructure. We didn't build the council houses. We didn't build the roads. We didn't build the schools. We didn't provide people to help them. And so that then fed on. There was the various Middle Eastern revolutions and especially Syrian refugees, and we saw sort of places like some of the Greek islands and other places.
Well, and there's also the attack by David Cameron and others on Libya, and that became the main place for migrants to come across the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I mean...
Great plan that was, wasn't it?
Well, and that's happened in not just Libya. No. In fact, not going into Syria perhaps had a similar effect, but I'm not really an expert on that.
Anyway, can I just ask you two, Martin and Kevin, what you make of this whole immigration business? Because, I mean, that seems to have been the fuel for a lot of the vote in the first place, the referendum in 2016, and now.
Well, as somebody who worked in Eastern Europe during the 1990s, all over the region, the British in particular pushed for a rapid expansion of the EU, because the Americans wanted to push the EU right up to the Russian border for geopolitical reasons. So people in the Baltic states, for example, who actually went into the euro at one stage, which ruined their economy. And I remember talking to them saying, this is bonkers, you don't want to do this.
But I mean, what I'm trying to get at, was the Labour Party over the last year or 2 years or 3 years just in denial about genuine worries about migration that weren't actually racist?
Well, can I just respond to what Robert was saying? I mean, of course we want that civilised discussion. No state in the world can have totally free movement across its borders. Nobody can have that. But of course in the United States at the beginning of the 19th century, you had lots and lots of waves of immigration coming in. And of course the trade unions and so on have leaflets in all sorts of different languages. You can't just come in here and get a job and undermine us. And of course there's always going to be issues around that. I mean, at one stage in the EU, they were saying that workers in Sweden would have to be paid at the same rate as they were in Latvia. But I think the European Court chucked that out and said, you know, you've got to pay them Swedish rates of pay if they're working in Sweden. And these sort of things are bound to be tension.
Okay, so what you're hinting at there is that actually the EU was a state, a superstate, though we never actually voted for it.
No, hang on. That's a bit different question. What I was trying to say is the Germans, for example, it was written into the extension agreements that there would be immigration controls. And the Germans were quite keen. They said, yes, we'll only allow a certain amount in and we'll keep it out for 10 years. But the British took the view, because the Americans were pushing them, let's just expand it as quickly as possible. And of course, Ukraine, with the so-called revolution in Maidan Square,
I wonder whether the EU is going to be quite happy to get rid of us after all this. But anyway, Kevin, what do you make of the immigration question? And
one of the curiosities of the Sunday Times Rich List was the largest subgroup in the Rich List, where the actual people that Idi Amin threw out of East Africa, they became millionaires faster than anybody else in the list. They have a tremendous commitment to work and to prove themselves. So certain waves of immigration have benefited our country enormously. It's, as Robert, the best answer, as Robert says, is a civilized discussion. That's the right way to do it.
Okay, well, Jeremy Corbyn says, rather irritatingly, I have to say, he's not going to go for a little while. He's going to still hang around. You would think that it would be better for him to just get out of the way and allow that process to carry on, Martin, wouldn't it?
Well, no, because, I mean, if you just resign just on the day, then it immediately creates an internal turmoil. He said he's going to go. There's going to have to be an internal election. We need to assess what the candidates are. I still haven't got any idea who I might vote for. We'll have to see who they turn out to be. But
who would you like to see taking over?
Well, I just don't want to talk about it.
John McDonnell?
Well, actually, I probably will, but that would imply that we're going to carry on the same road we've been on. But that's a debate we're going to have to have. What I really want to see is, like in New Zealand, we should be committed to PR. Because in New Zealand, the left wing of the Labour Party forced PR in the 1980s.
Clive's just had his,
way behind the curve.
Clive's just had his hand up, but we'll hear from you after we hear from Jeremy this morning. Very early this morning.
Brexit has so polarised and divided debate in this country, it has overridden so much of a normal political debate. And I recognise that has contributed to the result that the Labour Party has received this evening all across this country. The issues of social justice and the issues of needs of people will not go away just because Brexit is dealt with in the way in which Boris Johnson presumably plans to deal with it at the moment. All those issues will come back centre stage in the debate. And the fundamental Labour message about justice and equality within our society is going to be one that is there for all time, because it's the very core of what my party believes in and what I will always advocate on behalf of my constituency and on behalf of my party. I want to also make it clear that I will not lead the party in any future general election campaign. I will discuss with our party to ensure there is a process now of reflection on this result and on the policies that the party will take going forward. And I will lead the party during that period to ensure that discussion takes place and we move on into the future.
Jeremy Corbyn speaking earlier today. Robert, why do you think he lost?
From my own experience of Bristol South, I think that there is, like a number of politicians, there is a kind of disconnect between what they say and what they do. And we noticed immediately in talking to families in Bristol South that what Jeremy Corbyn was talking about there, which I would entirely agree with about social justice and fairness and equality, simply isn't happening in Bristol South and hasn't happened for a very long time. So, and this is why I think the Brexit Party wants to talk about changing politics for good. It's actually doing what you're saying you're doing. And there's a lot of people will, during this campaign, they will say, oh, you need to do this. Or I had a discussion with somebody and they said, well, of course, you know, we get far more out of the EU than we put in. And I said, well, no, there's a simple fact. We get 38p for every pound. That's not true. And there's a lot of disconnects, a lot of lies, a lot of nonsense going on. And this is why I'm talking about a courteous debate. And actually, we've got facts, but we've got wisdom, and we must be sure that we differentiate between the two.
Clive?
Over half of the population voted for a left-leaning party, but a third of them didn't vote Labour. And that's what made the difference. If the new Labour leader believes in a pact so that the left can unite, the left will win the next election, and that will frighten the Tories something wrong.
Martin, the danger here, of course, is that this is the Labour's last chance. Well, it's been about 40 years since there's been a socialist Labour leader. It may be another 40 years before there's another one.
Not if I have anything to do with it. We're not going to change that much. Because that's an internal discussion. I think I'm picking up on what has just been said over here. I think we do need to change the electoral system. I'm 60 years old, and during the 1980s, we had a minority government which smashed our industrial base.
Okay, that's our guest. Thanks very much to them. Green Party councillor for Clifton Down, Clive
this
Stevens,
and BCFM
Brexit Party candidate for Bristol South, Robert
DeVito
Boutin. Join us after the US Owned Comcast News at 7 as we take our weekly look around the world.
Community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.